Listener supported. WNYC Studios.
I'm Brian Lehrer. This is my Daily Politics Podcast from WNYC Studios. It's Monday, November 16th. What a disconnect there is right now between the actual news people are getting from the post-election lawsuits filed by the Trump campaign and the messages from the campaign itself. On the lawsuit front, as the Washington Post reports, not a single vote has been invalidated in any state. And some breaking news on that front last night, according to the Post, the Trump campaign withdrew one of its most aggressive legal claims, that 680,000 votes should be thrown out in Pennsylvania because election observers couldn't see the ballots up close enough. The campaign reserves the right to file that claim again, the Post tells us, but for now it's been scrapped, and maybe permanently. And that would be huge because the election observers' issue was the only claim big enough to change the outcome in Pennsylvania. And that's, you know, with 680,000 votes, that's such a large number of votes that it could have actually made a difference. Now, the Pennsylvania outcome is typical of how it's going so far. Forgive me while I flip through my notes here, because there's a Washington Post article that I want to refer to that I will find in a minute, but that basically goes state by state. It goes state by state and shows how badly these are going. And yet at the same time, I'm also watching the Trump campaign's mailing list. From Saturday morning through this morning, they sent out 27 fundraising emails. For example, this one, subject line, rigged. Inside, there is no claim of how the election was rigged, just a picture of the president and the words, "It's time to fight back. Can President Trump count on you?" And then it has dollar amounts you can click on to donate. Another one, subject line, "I'm not going anywhere." Inside, something that reads like a Borat parody of a dictator. It says, "One thing has become clear these last few days. I am the American people's all-time favorite president." It actually says that. Followed by, "They rigged the election," and another ask for money. 27 of those to the list that I'm on since Saturday morning. And even if the lawsuits don't show any proof of fraud, even if not one vote is invalidated in any state, there is something the campaign is still aiming for as a strategy to overturn the counted results. The Washington Post framed it as a question the other day, basically, can the Trump campaign steal the election through state legislatures? The path to flipping the result that way got narrower over the weekend as Georgia and Arizona both got called for Biden by the networks that had seen them as too close to call. Maybe you missed that. It would take flipping multiple state legislatures, at least three, to overturn the election in that way. But that extreme politicization of the Electoral College, that raid on the electors, is the biggest remaining threat to the actual outcome becoming the certified outcome. The writer of that article, Washington Post correspondent Amber Phillips, joins us now. She also writes the Post's daily email newsletter, The 5-Minute Fix. Amber, always great to have you. Welcome back to WNYC.
Hi, Brian. Thanks for having me.
And let's start on the news that people may have missed because it broke late in the day on Friday. The final uncalled states got called by the Associated Press and the networks. North Carolina for Trump, after being too close to call all the time leading up to that. Arizona and Georgia for Biden. Does that mean, barring lawsuits or state legislature tricks, that there is now a final electoral vote count?
That's right. Yes, it does. It means Joe Biden got this, the exact same number of electoral votes that President Trump won in 2016, 306, which the president at the time rightly claimed was a really big electoral college margin over Hillary Clinton. Biden has now completely flipped that, and he's done it by flipping you know, three states that Democrats wanted back in their column really badly: Michigan, Wisconsin, Pennsylvania, and then Arizona and Georgia, two states that Democrats have been trying recently, especially, to turn blue, and Joe Biden did it for them.
Same as Trump won with in 2016, 306 to 232. And so we note that Biden took back all three so-called blue wall states that were the focus in 2016 of so much angst on the Democratic side: Michigan, Wisconsin, and Pennsylvania. Plus, he took the historically red states of Arizona and Georgia. It turns out to be a pretty impressive win, having flipped five major states, all of them high population states, that went for Trump the last time around.
Yeah, that's right. And Democrats feel he did it by expanding his coalition and the party's coalition. I mean, you look in Georgia, a lot of black voters came out for Biden, just the same way they helped him win his primary earlier this year in another neighboring state, South Carolina. You look in Arizona, there were, you know, specific groups of Native American and Hispanic and Latino voters who came out for Biden in big ways, young voters as well. And then up in the north, you had more white blue collar voters who supported Biden, at least in higher numbers than they did for Hillary Clinton.
So Trump has to rely on the courts or on the state legislatures in that extreme scenario if he's going to try to flip the election results, as he still insists he is trying to do. Now I found that Washington Post article that I misplaced a minute ago, so I'm going to read from this, as it's pretty interesting and in some parts entertaining, from your colleagues David Fahrenthold, Emma Brown, and Hannah Knowles. And the headline was, "Trump lost at the ballot box. His legal challenges aren't going any better." And it says, rather than revealing widespread or even isolated fraud, the effort by Trump's legal team in five key states has so far done the opposite. It's affirmed the integrity of the election that Trump lost. And again, not a single vote has been overturned. And here are a couple of examples. It says, some moments veered into the absurd as the president's lawyers tried and failed to use Trump's reality-bending logic on baffled, unbending judges. Are your observers in the counting room? Judge Paul Diamond asked Trump's lawyers in Pennsylvania at one point, in a case where Trump was seeking to stop the vote count in Philadelphia. In that case, Trump's suit depended on the answer being no. The observers are not in the counting room. The logic for stopping the vote count was that GOP observers were not being allowed to watch it, but the actual answer was yes, the observers were there. So Trump's lawyer tried an answer that wasn't yes or no. There's a non-zero number of people in the room, he responded. That did not work. And then it says, the mismatch between Trump's rhetoric about voter fraud and his ability to prove it was particularly stark in Georgia. I love this story. There, Trump's campaign said this week that it had found the clearest possible evidence of fraud: a dead man had voted. Someone used the identity of James Blaylock of Covington, Georgia, to cast a ballot in last week's election, even though Blaylock died in 2006, the campaign posted on its website, along with a screenshot of Blaylock's obituary. It added, these victims of voter fraud deserve justice. Trump's campaign had one thing right: James Blaylock is dead. But he wasn't the one who voted. It was Mrs. James Blaylock, his 96-year-old widow. Mrs. Blaylock, whose first name is Agnes, had chosen to be listed on the voter rolls under her husband's name, that is, Mrs. James Blaylock, which is now an uncommon practice, but is legal. And it goes on from there to other absurdities and the count of something like 20 lawsuits, which have all already failed. There are, however, a couple still active. But that's quite a record in court, Amber, and those are quite a few little stories there.
Yeah, that's right. And my colleagues point out, as you did at the top of your show, Brian, all these legal challenges, in addition to fizzling very quickly under the initial scrutiny of a judge, have yet to overturn a single vote being cast. I think it's increasingly clear to Republicans supporting the president, yeah, I say Republican officials, but not necessarily the president's base, that these aren't going anywhere. The president does not have an avenue to overturn this election results through the courts. There wasn't any kind of widespread fraud enough to change it by tens of thousands of votes in several states.
So let's look at this last-ditch effort aimed at state legislatures. You remind us in your article that the Constitution says it is states that get to decide how to allocate their electors. So I'm going to read the exact language for people who haven't heard it from Article 2, Section 1, Clause 2 of my pocket Constitution. It says, each state shall appoint in such a manner as the legislature thereof may direct a number of electors equal to the whole number of senators and representatives to which the state may be entitled to Congress. I'm going to read the first part of that again because it's the key part. Each state shall appoint in such manner as the legislature thereof may direct a number of electors. So, Amber, that says nothing about the popular vote directing the number of electors. It says each state shall appoint that number in such a manner as the legislature may direct. So how much leeway does a Republican legislature have to just seize that power and ignore the popular vote if it went for the Democrat?
Well, yeah, so the state can, give electoral votes to a candidate based on the number of cows on the side of the road, if they wanted to agree on that. That's like an extreme reading of that, you know, what the Constitution says about state powers. But I use it to emphasize what you just did. States can decide how to set up the election. But to answer your question more directly, a wide range of legal experts I've talked to are part of an election crisis task force say they have no power legally to give electors to a different candidate based on something other than the popular vote after the election. So before the election, Republican legislatures in states like Wisconsin and Michigan and Pennsylvania wanted to say President Trump gets our electors no matter what. And they managed to get that passed into law, which there are Democratic governors there, so that would be an issue. But let's say they did that. Okay, then President Trump gets those states' electors no matter what. After the election, you can't change things. The expectation of voters going to the polls was this was going to be based on the popular vote in that state. And so legal experts I've spoke to say this, you know, if a legislature were to suddenly change this, and they are getting pressure in those three states specifically by the president has mentioned this, sitting Republican governor in Florida talked about this weekend. There are grassroots pressure in these states from Republican county chairs for legislatures to consider this. If they were to do it and just say, okay, you know, there's a lot of chaos, we're not really sure who won, we have the authority to change the votes or the electoral votes, and we say they go to Trump, that would almost certainly face immediate legal challenges, is my understanding.
At very least, legal challenges. And probably a popular revolt at a level that it's hard to imagine at this moment how far it would go, but you can imagine theoretically how far it would go. And here's the mathematical bar. You referred to three states just now. Now that Biden has 306 electoral votes, it would take probably three states at least to pull off this gimmick in order to make it work. Pennsylvania has 20 electoral votes. That would bring it down to 286. Georgia and Michigan each have 16. Either of those would still leave Biden with the necessary 270. It would take a third state, Arizona has 11, Wisconsin has 10, or Nevada with its 6, to actually pull this off. That's how high a bar this last-ditch effort would have to cross. So why did the Trump campaign send out 27 fundraising emails since Saturday claiming the election was rigged and they can still win re-election?
Yeah, it gets his base going. I live in Washington, D.C., and this weekend there was a big crowd, not near a million, like Trump spokeswoman Kayleigh McEnany tried to claim on Twitter, but a big crowd here, claiming they support the president and that the election was stolen. And there's a significant portion of his base that is willing to believe this despite the facts. And so talking about this, ramping it up, falsely claiming all this stuff gets his base going and keeps Trump in the center of the political universe, even as he's leaving or is supposed to leave in the next couple weeks.
And that particular story from last night about Pennsylvania. I don't know if you're in the weeds on this enough to have a take on it, but the Washington Post article that was filed after 11 o'clock last night referred to the withdrawal of what is really the biggest claim in any of these suits, that because the election observers allegedly can't see the ballots up close in places in Pennsylvania, that more than 600,000 votes should just be invalidated. And that, of course, would make the election result inconclusive, and the state legislature in Pennsylvania would be on slightly more solid ground. But the Trump campaign withdrew that claim last night, even though it's technically still in the introduction to the lawsuit. They withdrew the part that actually makes the argument that since the electors weren't close enough, allegedly, that 600,000 plus votes should be thrown out. But they did reserve the right to put it back in. And there's supposed to be a hearing in this case in court in Pennsylvania tomorrow. So I don't know if this is more confusing than clarifying, folks, but Amber, can you put any more clarity on it than that?
Yeah, I can. This was the central stilt by which the president himself, who's tweeted about this numerous times, including literally a day before the Trump campaign dropped this part of the lawsuit. This was the central stilt that they had lifted up all of their voter fraud claims on. It was specifically focused on Pennsylvania, the biggest electoral prize of these swing states. And like you said, Brian, it was a leap of logic to say we weren't allowed to watch the counting of the votes, therefore the votes are fraudulent. You know, there was Democratic machinations. You know, maybe they all got counted for Biden. We don't know. We weren't in the room. We don't know.
Couldn't be determined. Yeah.
Yeah, it couldn't be determined. So throw them out. And Trump actually tweeted, therefore, I won the great state of Pennsylvania. I think that was Friday or Saturday night. So these massive leaps of logic that when it came time to put that into legalese and for lawyers to stand before a court and argue this, they couldn't do it. And so they realized they had to take it out. And that's in part because these Republican observers were in the room, as you had just outlined. They weren't as close as they would like. And there's been the top Republican election official in Philadelphia has said, yeah, we had to boot, I think it was Corey Lewandowski, a big Trump ally, is one of his first campaign managers, out of the room because he wasn't following COVID requirements. Mm. And so this is just, it's just something out of nothing is what we're seeing this boil down to. And it's a massive problem for the Trump campaign because this specific instance of claiming that Republican officials were kept out of a Philly vote counting, watching Philly vote counting was literally what they were hoisting their flag of voter fraud on.
So why did they withdraw the claim rather than, you know, throw it against the wall and see what sticks and let a judge throw it out, or maybe the judge would accept it?
Yeah, I'm not sure the answer to that. That's a very good question, especially since you have the president and, you know, his top lawyer, Rudy Giuliani, pushing this over and over and over again. But their claims are false. And so, you know, my understanding would be they couldn't argue this with a straight face in front of judges. And maybe this is it's hard to tell, but maybe this is some kind of attempt to try to save this lawsuit, which I think is kind of boiling down to the last major push that they're going to be able to make in the courts.
Alexander in Queens, you're on WNYC with Amber Phillips from The Washington Post. Hi, Alexander.
Oh, good morning. Thank you for having me. I just have a question for you and your guest. I wonder if, given, you know, the baselessness of these claims, why Democrats, including President-elect Biden, aren't pushing harder in the court of public opinion to make the case that the real effort to steal the election is being made now, retroactively, by Trump and his allies. I'm sure there's a reason for that, but I'd like to hear what it is. Thank you very much.
Thank you very much. I have a thought about Biden, and you're closer to it than I am, Amber, so obviously we'll want to hear yours. My thought is that Biden is playing this just right, and that some other Democrats are getting too exercised publicly about it. You know, the president has the right to go to court. Any candidate who lost an election has the right to challenge the results in court until the certification date, which in this case is December 8th. And so he has that right. So I think that Biden would risk sounding like you doth protest too much, you know, like why are you trying to tamp down these lawsuits? That's his legal right. If they're as unfounded as you say, as they're so far proving to be, then let them play out. You said be patient in the first place because all the votes would not be finalized on election night. We only have to be patient a little bit more, you know, a couple of weeks, and then this will peter out in court of its own lack of merit, and then there it will be. So if you jump up and say, stop going to court, stop, you know, asking for recounts, all this stuff, then it sounds like you have something to hide when it doesn't look like they really do.
Yeah, I think that's right. Biden, our reporting has been that Biden doesn't want to get down in the mud on this. Some of his advisors are looking at legal challenges to challenge these legal challenges to say, just stop. We won the election, guys. But Biden has said or indicated that he's not supportive of that and just is trying to act like president. But that being said, to your point, Brian, about a split in the Democratic Party, about how hard to attack Republicans on this, I think there's a difference between the president-elect and his team and Senate Democrats who are desperately trying to fight to have essentially what would be a one vote majority in the Senate if they win these two Georgia special elections on January 5th. And so these are turnout elections. And just the same way Republicans can't risk ditching Trump supporters or having them not excited about going out to the election, and so they can't say Trump lost, Democrats really want to talk about the egregiousness of this, of the president trying to steal an election.
Mike in Rockaway, you're on WNYC with Amber Phillips from The Washington Post. Hi, Mike.
Hey, Brian. Thanks for taking my call. I have a question about how we proceed in terms of getting to December and those critical dates. What happened? Take me through the process. I mean, legally, you know, what happens to this whole thing?
That's a great question. So let's end on this, Amber, because there are some dates. They call it December 8th, the safe harbor date for the electors to be certified. What does safe harbor date mean?
Yeah, it means if there are any disputes over the slate of the electors, like Republicans in Pennsylvania say, no, they go to Trump, they got to be resolved from within the state. So that would mean like the Democratic governor, Republican state legislature have to fight over that. And then if there's any controversy about it, we go to Congress, where legal experts tell me it is just a mess for what the law says, which is written more than 100 years ago, Congress needs to do to decide. But it would likely essentially come down to the governor certifying results. And in many of these states that are in question, it's a Democratic governor. So anyways, so by December 8th, the states have to certify the slate of electors. And so by December 8th, we'll know whether Pennsylvania, Michigan, or Wisconsin Republicans do try to, what I would say is steal the election and the electors from Joe Biden. Then on December 14th, the electors meet in their states and they vote. And the Supreme Court has said that, yeah, you can, as an elector, be what's called a faithless elector. You can vote, for Joe Biden, even though you're from Montana and your state's elector should go to President Trump, but your state can punish you for it. That being said, there aren't a ton of punishments, especially not harsh ones that states set up. It's mostly like on the honor system. And then by December 23rd, all the votes, you know, for those electoral colleges, which meet in their specific states, I'm not sure how that's going to get done in a pandemic, go to Congress. Congress certifies them, which they do at every election, but we don't normally need to think or hear about that because it's just like a totally normal thing. And then, you know, if there's still any issue about a slate of electors coming up, I'm not quite sure how it would come up after that safe harbor deadline, but legal experts say, like, okay, maybe just watch for if there's still any issues, Congress would not really know what to do. It could be a disaster by that January 6th date for Congress to certify results. And then January 20th is inauguration.
A lot, hopefully, clarified by our clarifier in chief this morning, Amber Phillips from The Washington Post, who also writes their daily politics newsletter, email newsletter called The 5-Minute Fix. Amber, we always appreciate it. Thanks a lot.
Thank you.
Brian Lehrer, a daily politics podcast, is an excerpt from my live daily radio show, The Brian Lehrer Show, on WNYC Radio, 10 a.m. to noon Eastern Time, if you want to listen live at wnyc.org. Thanks for listening today. Talk to you next time.